nature is part and parcel of the production process, has always been. When you think of the oxygen that we breathe, the water that we drink, the land that we till, they've always been complementary inputs into the production of whatever output we were producing.
More and more people are moving from rural places to cities and are disconnected from nature. So I think this disconnect contributes to not appreciating or understanding the true value of nature. And this is where we get to the elephants. I'm Fabio Berzaghi. I'm an ecologist at the Laboratory for Sciences of Climate and Environment.
And my name is Ralph Shami. I am an assistant director in the Institute for Capacity Development.
And welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. In this program, how preserving a small elephant could have a big impact in the fight against climate change. While the African elephant is the largest and probably the most famous land animal in the world, very few people know anything about the African forest elephant, which is much smaller and lives in densely wooded rainforests. Their numbers are declining thanks to deforestation and poachers, and likely face extinction before long. Other than local conservationists and the biologists who study them, African forest elephants have very few advocates. But what if the valuable services that these forest elephants provide were more widely understood? What if people knew that the African forest elephant provides carbon capture services valued at over $150 billion? And what if those countries that host them could tap into that equity and benefit from their conservation efforts? Economist Ralph Shami and ecologist Fabio Berzaghi looked into how placing a monetary value on the services provided by natural resources could help curtail the demise of yet another species from our ecosystem. Their article entitled "The Secret Work of Elephants" is published in the online edition of Finance and Development magazine. So if nature is in fact our capital, or at least part of our capital, why have we taken it for granted for so long? And how do elephants fit into this story?
We have to remind ourselves that for the longest time, we lived in balance with nature. We are part of this natural world. The humans viewed themselves as part of nature, and as nature, as an input, also an output in the process. The divorce, I believe, came with the advent of the Cartesian paradigm. The Descartes, if you like, started with Descartes, where what Descartes did, he divorced the mind from the body. And by divorcing the mind from the body, humans were divorced from their natural world. And of course, the Cartesian paradigm and what followed, you know, with, if you like, the Renaissance period, and then all of these fueled the Industrial Revolution. And when you divorce humans from their natural world, meaning what means is that the sustainability of our well-being and our economic systems are no longer dependent on the sustainability of the ecosystem, then basically you are growing without paying any attention to the impact of your own activity on nature. And that's also fueled by a few assumptions that were made by very powerful writers at the time, that the presumption is that we are endowed with infinite nature or infinite commodities. So when your existence doesn't depend on nature, you're separate, and nature is abundant, then there is no incentive for you to try to understand what nature needs, because it's always there. It'll always be there. As a result, you got this Industrial Revolution that basically focused on the humans. It's a human-centric view of the world. And so you can now, rather than give and take, as we used to live before, now you're just taking, you're extracting from nature, and you're not giving back. Of course, reality hits, as we see right now with the climate change, with everything that's happening around us, And we realize that nature is not infinite, and nature cannot be, is not separate from us. We are part of nature. So our own sustainability depends on the sustainability of the natural world. And that realization basically forces us to understand, so what does nature do for us? The elephants are just one example. The whales is another example. Mangroves, trees, bees, insects, all of them, they're part and parcel of what I like to think of is one breath. And that's the work that Fabio has done, is showing the importance of the elephants to our own existence through the carbon sequestration role that they play.
Yes, so thanks, Rob. We've been learning lately about this interconnection between animals, plants, and climate, and we've been learning that forest elephants that live in the tropical forest of Central and West Africa, these are different species from the savanna elephants, which are more known and more studied. So a slightly smaller elephant, they are more adapted to live in the forest. They eat huge variety of fruit, plants. And what we've been learning is that these forest elephants are important for enhancing the carbon storage in tropical forests. So if you imagine these elephants in the forest, they move from place to place looking for fruit and plants. And in this process, they stomp on small trees and they consume a lot of plant material. So elephants actually reduce the number of trees in the forest, and they allow trees to grow larger, grow taller. And this allows these trees to capture more carbon. And there's another point to the story, because there's different type of trees in the tropical forest. There's trees that grow very fast but store less carbon per volume, and there's trees that grow slowly and store more carbon. So this process of thinning, of reducing the number of plants, actually favors these slow growing trees, but with the advantage that they store more carbon. So large trees with a high carbon density overall improve the amount of carbon stored in African tropical forest. So in this context, we see that they provide this unique service, which we can quantify down to one elephant. So this allows to put some numbers into this service, which then leads directly to the carbon market. And it's quite an effect, because one elephant adds 26 tons of carbon per hectare. So if you think about the size of the Central African tropical forest and you multiply by the number of elephants, then the effect is outstanding.
So they essentially, in a nutshell, promote the growth of the larger trees in the forest and bolster carbon sequestration. Ralph, how much carbon are we talking about, and what is the monetary value of that carbon in today's market?
Right. I mean, when you, as Fabio was saying, 26 tons per hectare, and when you look at the overall area, it's, let's say, it would be equivalent to the multiples of what the carbon dioxide that is captured by, let's say, the trees of Central Park.
Wow.
Multiples of that. Hmm. And when you put a dollar amount, you get about $1.7 million per elephant. So
wow.
the elephant's worth in terms of the carbon services only is each elephant is $1.7 million. Now, let's understand what, you know, let's put it in context. A dead elephant, due to illegal poaching, fetches about $40,000 for in terms of the ivory from the tusks. So you can do the math that a living elephant is far more valuable to us in services that are valuable to us than a dead elephant that only fetches maximum of $40,000, and for the poacher, much less. So this is what we are trying to say, is that, you know, a living elephant is valuable to us.
And so you're your article in Finance and Development magazine, a very interesting article, but it is based on a comprehensive study that makes the business case for the preservation of large animals, notably elephants. How do you propose to secure more investment in nature conservancy?
Well, once we put it in monetary terms, you can start to build a case around how to help protect and grow the elephant population that's being decimated. Because notice that up till now, we know they're dying. We know they're whether it be in the savannah or in the forest, elephants are under threat. And we're unable to stop what's happening to them. The system in place right now, we have penalties, we have punishments, and still the price of ivory keeps increasing and poaching is on the rise. So that method of just purely penalties is not working. And because what it's doing, it's just saying basically, we want elephants to exist because perhaps the rich world would like to come and visit them every now and then and have a look at them and enjoy them. You see, and there's for the people on the ground in the areas where the elephants exist, do not understand the value to them of a living elephant. Well, the valuation method that we do, and by valuing the services the elephants do for us, especially that elephants are local, so we know where they are. We can then start to make the case for the local communities that, hey, a living elephant is far more valuable for you than a dead one. Meaning for the poacher that has the elephant in the sight of his rifle, does the calculation and realizes, my goodness, if I were to shoot this elephant, I first run the risk of being caught and if not shot. And what am I going to get out of all of this? Maybe $10, because they don't get, the amount doesn't go to them, the value of the ivory. Whereas if this elephant is alive, maybe I can get something else that is more permanent, that is less risky. And this is where the power of the valuation can help you go beyond a system of penalties, a system of incentives, changing people's behavior in a way. And I can elaborate on this if you like, how this can be made, this experience be more positive, generating local ownership, because that's the only way you're going to save the elephants.
And so, speaking of local ownership, you also talk about another benefit that would come out of the valuation, a monetary valuation of these elephants in debt for nature swaps. How do debt for nature swaps work? And, who holds the value or administers the value of each one of these elephants that are worth, $1.7 million, according to your calculations?
Right. So in general, the debt for nature swap, briefly, basically you have a country that's indebted, the debtor name, and owes money, let's say, to a creditor country. The creditor country cares about nature and the environment, says, okay, I will forgive you part or whole of this debt if you, in return, look after nature. That's the debt for nature swap. I mean, very simply put. And you can forgive, you can figure out what the face value of the debt and you can forgive half of it, all of it, such that the debtor nation looks after nature on behalf of the creditor that is forgiven the country the debt. The way this would, and this has been ongoing for quite some time now, since the 90s, the way this one would work is by valuing the elephants, then you actually can figure out it gives a floor for the amount of debt that you would be able to forgive. For example, if a country owes 100 million and the elephant is worth 1.7 million, by the way, that's the minimum, because we're using price of carbon of $23 or $24, and that's really a minimum amount. I mean, the IMF itself talks about a carbon price of $75. And anyway, so what you would do, that you're able now to use the value of the elephant to figure out how much debt you would like to, the creditor country. By the way, that to nature swap could be with the government or could be with a private entity. And so the private entity or the government, the creditor country, say, okay, I will forgive you this much of debt in return for so many elephants. And we can do this over, let's say the maturity of the debt is 10 years. You'll say for the 10 years, you're looking after those elephants, whatever the number is, you can divide 100 by 1.7. And your job is to look after those elephants. But this is just the beginning of how you would actually protect these elephants.
But I mean, if an elephant dies, does the country have to actually pay $1.7 million to its creditors?
Yes, exactly. Because now you've created the benchmark. You're saying you create the valuation, right? It's looking after the number of elephants that we agree on. Each elephant is worth $1.7 million, and that's your job, is to ensure that these elephants are protected and actually that the population grows. And after 10 years, the ownership reverts back to the country, because after all, these are their elephants. But that's just the beginning of the story. Because once you engage, you take the valuation, and you already have the legal framework, you have the system of penalties, you have the valuation, then the next thing is that you need the local ownership, because that's what's going to keep the elephants alive, is the people on the ground around them that feel that they are doing something for us, that we can get meaningful employment, meaningful income, meaningful living from having these live animals around us. Mm-hmm. So by valuing the elephants, you start to create markets around a living elephant, living nature. And that would bring in the private, sector in partnership with the public sector to create markets that protect that market. Even you can think of now, once you have these elephants with all that attention, you can start thinking of tourism, you can start thinking of other services, insurance that come around and benefit from it, thus bringing with it funding into this market. The market grows. And again, I always have this image of the poacher.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, looking at the elephant, thinking, you know what? If you're alive, I may get meaningful employment.
Yeah.
Right? Because no one wants to be shot at. No one wants to spend their life ducking and doing illegal stuff. And I may get a permanent job looking after you, be it in tourism, be it in services, be it in whatever ancillary activities related to protecting and growing the elephants.
We're not discussing the intrinsic value of the elephant. We're discussing the value for the service provided. And it's important to that money goes for protection, for law enforcement, and then, of course, to deal with some of the local issues that come in places where you have people living close to animals, human wildlife conflict. Of course, this needs to be part of the equation. If we want elephants, in some places it's unavoidable that elephants will live close to human dwellings. So some of this money needs to go for resolving these conflicts. And then, of course, what Ralph said about the poacher who doesn't like to be poacher for life. I know I look at this other example of tropical places like Costa Rica, where they've made these huge national parks, and actually the poachers or the miners that used to work in that area became tourist guides or became part of the local tourism industry.
Yeah.
So of course we need to think about on the ground with the actual practical problems of the people in these places. And yes, I totally agree with what Roth said. People would prefer to do something more sustainable.
And Bruce, if I may, I mean, your first question to me was, how is it that we forgot that nature is and remains a part of our production process, our partner? And what this is doing is bringing us back to balance, mm-hmm. You see? The elephant is just one example. You can think of the whales in the ocean sequestering carbon. You can think of the mangrove, seagrass, trees, what have you. All of them contribute to our well-being. And this is one way of capturing, as Fabio is saying, one aspect of it, which is the carbon side, but certainly not the intrinsic value. So we are not discovering, I think of it like it's a self-rediscovery. We're trying to go back to where we were before the Cartesian paradigm took us off in a direction where it divorced us from nature and provided us temporarily with kind of amnesia, forgetting that we are part of this nature, that nature is one breath, and all of us are part of it. So on a philosophical level, this, to me, is quite important that we are looking at the elephant beyond, of course, intrinsically, it's infinitely valuable, every species, every living being. But here, we're just saying, hey, let's rediscover our relationship with the elephant. We are all part of this one breath. It's nothing new. It's just rediscovery that humans are part of this natural world. And so the sustainability of the natural world ensures our own sustainability.
And do you think that, this pandemic that we're living through right now with COVID-19 is showing us, the power of nature and how it controls our economies and perhaps, our very existence?
Yes, think about it. This is a virus that you can't see in a local wet market in a faraway place, almost brought the world economies to their knees. How much more do you need as proof positive of the power of nature, right? People always tell me, is nature macrocritical? What if this is not proof positive, what is? COVID is just one example of saying nature is very important to our own existence. But I'd like to kind of put it in a more positive spin, that this is the wake-up call of the importance of investing in living nature. When we say an elephant is worth 1.7 million, and that's a living elephant. Just like when we say a living whale is worth 2 million versus a dead elephant is worth 40,000. That means we get more out of a living elephant. And this is just carbon. We're not talking about elephant impact on biodiversity,
tourism,
impact on tourism. This is just one single aspect that we can measure. That's why we did that work. But the beauty of it is a much bigger lesson, that we are part of this natural world, that this natural world alive brings us far more benefits that we can actually measure with credibility and with concrete numbers that are relevant to us. And we can create economies around a living nature. I mean, the action is a change in our behaviors. We need a paradigm shift. We need to change the framework that we've been using, including the economics framework that I am part of, that I grew up in, that I worked in. We need to look at nature as our partner, and the sustainability of our economic system depends on the sustainability of the ecosystem. Only when we fully internalize that and we come up with a better paradigm, only then can we really talk about what I would like to think is a sustainable, inclusive, nature-friendly growth. Only then we're talking about the well-being of ourselves and of our economic systems.
Fabio Berzaghi and Ralph Shami, thanks so much for this interesting conversation about the valuation of elephants and indeed important research.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks for the opportunity.
Ralph Shami is Assistant Director at the IMF's Institute for Capacity Development, and Fabio Berzaghi is an ecologist at the Laboratory for Sciences of Climate and Environment in France. They are also co-authors, along with Duke University's Connell Fullenkamp and University of Notre Dame's Thomas Cosimano, of The Secret Work of Elephants, published in the online edition of Finance and Development magazine. Read it at imf.org/FND. And you can listen to other IMF podcasts on Spotify or Google Play or whatever platform you use to listen. Search for IMF Podcasts, subscribe, and leave a review if you like what you're hearing. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.